From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the Working Families Party endorsement of Governor Cuomo shakes up the Capitol. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on that endorsement, and we'll have some congressional reaction to the resignation of VA Secretary Shinseki. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo tried to change the subject with two economic development appearances this week in the aftermath of a political endorsement that has shaken up the Capitol. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo promised the Working Families Party that he would fight to take the Senate away from a coalition of Republicans and independent Democrats and give it to the mainstream Democrats. In a video he sent to the party's convention, he condemned the state's GOP.
This is about ultra-conservatives in the Republican Party trying to force their agenda. As they have done in Washington, they now want to do in New York.
Cuomo also vowed to work for a slate of progressive issues like abortion rights and raising the minimum wage. That was on Saturday. By Wednesday, the governor was back on the moderate to conservative topics of economic development and how to reduce taxes and regulations on businesses.
The governor of the great state, Andrew Cuomo. Thank you.
Cuomo made appearances in Rochester and Buffalo. He announced that some high-tech companies have agreed to sign up for a tax-free program for new or expanding businesses in struggling upstate cities. Cuomo was joined by Republican Senator Joe Roebuck, and he gave him a warm welcome.
Joe Roebuck, who's a great senator and a good friend. Let's give him a round of applause.
Senator Roebuck returned the compliments.
This would not have happened without the governor, but what's extraordinary about it to me is he not only viewed, but he listened to people from upstate New York and then took all that together and made the vision a reality. And it's hard. I could make my bad joke. A Democrat, no taxes? I didn't know that was possible.
Afterward, the governor was asked by reporters about his Working Families pledge to oust the GOP from the Senate. He seemed to see no contradiction when he boasted of his good working relationship with Republicans and said he doesn't want to change that.
The lack of partisanship in Albany is something that I'm very proud of. And Democrats, Republicans, we're New Yorkers first. And that's how I govern, and that's what's turning this state around, and I'm not going back.
Cuomo, referring to the party conventions in general as political silly season, says his remarks advocating the election of more Democrats should not come as a surprise or be seen as controversial.
You had a Democratic convention, and you have Democrats saying they're going to support Democrats. I don't think that's ultimately shocking news for anyone.
Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos is taking the governor's pledge to get rid of the GOP more seriously. He says he doesn't think there will be agreement on any major issues in the legislative session because of the breach.
We always continue discussions, but I would say that most of the more controversial things will be brought up next year.
The Working Families Party had no comment. Green Party candidate for governor Howie Hawkins stopped in Albany as part of a statewide swing. He says the Working Families Party is no longer in a position to criticize the governor.
After Working Families gave him the nomination, they gave him all the power. They don't have any leverage till after the election.
Hawkins says the continued unrest, though, by some on the left over Cuomo's re-election could mean that he will get more votes than expected. He says he thinks it's not aiming too high to expect double digits as the percentage of New Yorkers who ultimately vote for an alternative progressive candidate. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, well, it was some week, especially when it came to the Working Families Party, their endorsement of Cuomo, and what comes next.
There are many in the Working Families Party who think that Cuomo's taxation policy and other things are reactionary. And so the progressive wing, basically, of the Democratic Party, which is Working Families quite often, decided, many of the people who were in that organization said, we won't endorse him. And it really looked like they weren't going to endorse him. And of all people, the head progressive, Mayor de Blasio, championed his cause. I can't even imagine what was going on those telephones between the two guys. But what happened was he had to promise, he, the governor, had to promise that what he was going to do was to say that he would make sure that the Democrats took over the Senate again. Now, there are many people who think, and I'm one of them, that the governor is largely responsible for the Senate remaining Republican. After all, he promised in the first campaign that he would veto the reapportionment bill, which would, of course, stop the Senate from reapportioning and protecting their own people, and he didn't do that. He promised he would, and he didn't. Then, when these four errant Democrats, or five errant Democrats, went over the Independent Democratic Conference, went over to the Republicans and said, we're with you now, even though the Republican, they say we're Democrats and we have Democratic principles, but when you come to things like campaign financing and everything else, the Republicans aren't going to let that happen. These guys say they're for it, but it's a bunch of nonsense, and the governor doesn't do anything about it. Look, let's face it. If the governor calls in the four errant or five errant Democrats and says, look, do you want a primary? Do you want me to kick you right out of this office? They'd be gone. They'd say, you get back where you belong with the regular Democrats. And that's the day that the Democrats take over the Senate. That could be done tomorrow. But he's not doing it. He's saying he'll do it in the future. He'll try. But that's, you know, alligator tears. Believe me, this is a guy who is known far and wide as somebody who doesn't take any prisoners. And if he tells them to get back with the other Democrats, they're going to get back with the other Democrats. It's that simple. So the Working Families Party, in the middle of the night, people were disgusted. They were leaving early. They vote to endorse Cuomo, but not by a lot. And I can tell you now that he almost lost that one, and they really had to work it. I understand even Mario Cuomo was there at the convention. So, you know, he did what he had to do.
He still has another problem, and that's a guy named Bill Samuels.
Well, Bill Samuels is the son of Howie the Horse Samuels. Howie the Horse ran for governor a couple of times, tried to win, didn't get there. Bill Samuels has taken on as his campaign credo the idea that you will give away, that you would get the fair campaign financing law, which means every time, as in New York City, somebody gives a dollar, you get $6 back from the state. Let's face it, the Democrats in the Assembly, no matter what they say, they pass it. They don't really want it, because why should they want Bernie the bartender coming out and running against them? But as long as the Senate was there saying no, they were in a safe position to pass it. Let's see what they do if the Democrats take the Senate. That'll be very interesting to see. But in any case, what we have is a governor who says that he's for it. He doesn't have it yet, but he's going to go into this campaign with $50 million. Well, you scratch your head and you say, how does somebody with $50 million go ahead and say he's for an equal campaign financing system? It's hard to believe. Anyway, Howie the Horse Samuels' son, Bill Samuels, is now taking up the cudgels, and he's running around the state and says he may run for lieutenant governor against the Hushi, who is the governor's handpicked person from Buffalo. Let's see whether he does it, and let's see what kind of telephone calls he gets.
Finally, you spoke with the state comptroller this week, Tom DiNapoli, who has elected out of the campaign finance system, but his opponent, Antonacci, has not, and it creates a little bit of an issue, but explained it pretty well.
Not really. He thinks that it was a phony bill, and he's right. One time, one year, directed at a guy who has often been considered the political nemesis of the governor, who does his job and looks at the governor's agencies and says, this is right and this isn't right. That's what you do when you're the comptroller. And the governor doesn't often like it. So now the governor's people are actually auditing the comptroller. Give me a break, will you please? They have a bill passed which allows them to do it, but it's unseemly. So Tom DiNapoli, good man, opts out. So the guy who's running against him doesn't opt out because, you know, he has every reason to take whatever free money there is. He's not going to win. And we know DiNapoli is very popular right now because the stock market has been doing so well and the state pension funds have been doing so well in their investments that they actually pay for many of the expenses of the various communities which opt into the pension fund. So he's very popular and he'll win.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi kicked off the first leg of a nationwide tour this week that included a stop in Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
Leader Pelosi kicked off her national bus tour in Seneca Falls Sunday, then stopped in Albany. When women succeed, America succeeds. That is the theme, the economic agenda intending to strengthen working families, in the words of its proponents, to unleash the power of women across the country through support of legislative proposals to extend equal pay, a minimum wage increase, paid family and medical leave, and other benefits to working women. The bus tour is out to underscore the challenges facing women and families and House Democrats' economic agenda to address those challenges. Pelosi and House Democrats aboard say they'll highlight the need for policies that work for women, including paid sick leave and quality, affordable child care. Pelosi delivered an emotionally charged speech that resonated among members of the crowd. She spoke of a female bus driver who told Pelosi she routinely saw mothers cry because they couldn't jeopardize their jobs to keep a sick child home.
She has no paid sick days, so she can't take one of those. And she cannot afford child care. She cannot afford child care. So what does she do? Doesn't make enough money to afford childcare. It isn't affordable in the first place. No paid leave, can't skip a day of work, can't afford it, and might lose her job. She puts a sick child on the bus in tears. And that's not rare.
Statistics provided by AFL-CIO show more than 4 in 10 private sector workers and 80% of low-wage workers do not have paid sick days. This means people, especially women who are more likely to work in low-wage jobs, constantly have to choose between their health and a paycheck.
But here we are, the greatest country that ever existed in the history of the world, living in a world where many countries, except us, except for very few countries, do not have paid sick days. We have to change that.
Monday morning, the bus rolled into Massachusetts with a stop at Middlesex Community College with U.S. Representatives Nikki Tsongas and John Tierney, who is facing a tough re-election battle this year. Next stop, Roxbury Technology in Boston's Hyde Park neighborhood shortly after noon with other members of the Bay State's all-Democratic congressional delegation, including Representatives Catherine Clark and Joe Kennedy. Again, Speaker Pelosi.
Equal pay for equal work is inevitable. To some, it may be inconceivable. We're going to shorten the distance between the inconceivable and the inevitable. And it will be when we have 17 more votes to pass the bill in Congress. It's that close.
The tour crystallizes a very vocal, active push to effect long-yearned-for changes to empower women and lift thousands of them from the dregs of poverty by raising the minimum wage.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has issued an order relating to a newly implemented energy capacity zone that is already raising electric rates. The order came 1 week before a scheduled day in court, as the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issued an order May 27th denying a rehearing to phase in a new capacity zone. The order came after Poughkeepsie-based Central Hudson and the New York State Public Service Commission sued FERC. In their filings with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, they say FERC failed to conclude their appeal matter on the rehearing within a reasonable amount of time, the new capacity zone having been implemented May 1st. The court panel June 3rd is slated to hear arguments on Central Hudson's and the PSC's motion to stay or cancel further auctions under the new capacity zone. Democratic Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney says the FERC order on the rehearing is another step in the process.
It's an important step because we wanted to smoke out the agency, which could be hiding behind their failure to make a final decision.
FERC Acting Chairman Cheryl LaFleur issued a statement saying, quote, "The decision to deny rehearing in the New York capacity zone cases was a difficult one." LaFleur said FERC had carefully considered all arguments and concerns, but that it ultimately decided by unanimous vote to implement the new zone. The new zone, LaFleur's statement said, is essential to ensuring current and future reliability in the lower Hudson Valley. Again, Maloney.
This fight is far from over. It may be an uphill fight, but we're going to stick at it. And I'll tell you what, we are not done. Working with other members of Congress on other avenues to attack this thing.
Earlier this year, Maloney sponsored legislation that would prohibit FERC from approving a new capacity zone that would raise rates for consumers. Republican Congressman Chris Gibson is a co-sponsor. In a statement, Gibson says the heads of FERC are apparently unwilling to listen to the people they work for. He adds that FERC is given the responsibility to weigh the costs and potential benefits. And in this case, the commission's decision to ignore the concerns of ratepayers and their elected representatives shows flawed judgment and a broken process in need of reform. Maloney talks about one avenue they're considering.
FERC only exists because the Congress appropriates its funds. And we are going to go through an appropriations process here very shortly where we can make clear how we feel about the actions of this unaccountable federal entity.
In its order, FERC writes that there is no simple solution to address the problems caused by the constraint between upstate New York and the lower Hudson Valley. And the reality is that, in the short run, consumers may pay more. FERC maintains that doing so is necessary to provide the appropriate price signals to incentivize developers to build or restore capacity. FERC adds that it hopes to emphasize that decision-making based only on avoiding price increases in the short term could threaten reliability and price stability in the long term. Again, Maloney.
I think it's very important that we continue to send a message in a bipartisan way at all levels of government, local and federal, that this is wrong. It is a solution in search of a problem. It is a Washington bureaucrat looking at numbers on a page and who knows nothing about what's going on in the Hudson Valley. There needs to be more local input. This thing should stop in its tracks, and we should take a hard look at the other alternatives that are out there to avoid this step, which is going to hurt regular families in the Hudson Valley.
FERC, in its order, notes that Helios Power Capital is seeking permission to restore to operational status the Dan Scammer generating plant in Newburgh due to the creation of the new capacity zone. In a statement responding to FERC's order, a PSC spokesman says the PSC is pressing on with the courts and will continue to pressure FERC to work with, not against, the state and its consumers. The PSC statement also says the PSC is disappointed and frustrated because FERC has been dismissive of the PSC's ongoing proceedings regarding proposed projects to develop at least 1,000 megawatts of new transmission capacity. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. After the announcement that Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki has resigned, some New York congressmen offered their thoughts on how the agency should change in the months ahead. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has more.
After weeks of political turmoil following the reporting of widespread wait lists and other deficiencies in veterans being able to find care, VA Secretary Eric Shinseki announced that he will leave his post. Congressman Bill Owens, a Democrat of Northern New York who represents Fort Drum, said his initial reaction to Shinseki's resignation was that he was disappointed the situation has gotten to this point. But with all the attention on the VA, Owens said it's now time for lawmakers to focus on the veterans.
And to make sure that we're doing the things and taking the steps that will correct the problem and then going forward, putting in place processes and procedures that will ensure it doesn't happen, and then equally important, putting in place management who will monitor these processes and procedures to ensure it doesn't happen again.
Owens, who served in the Air Force, said a change in the VA could help address a significant problem in his largely rural district, the lack of specialty clinics and long distances veterans must often travel to obtain care.
I think that that's critically important, particularly when you have people who are Vietnam veterans and World War II veterans and Korean veterans who maybe in their 70s and 80s having to go hours to either Albany or to Syracuse. I think they need to have the option of being able to go to their community hospital if that entity has the service available.
Hudson Valley Republican Chris Gibson, a retired Army colonel, thanked Secretary Shinseki for his service and said the change in leadership alone will not fix the problems within the VA.
We do thank General Shinseki for his long and faithful service to the country. I think he has made the right move by stepping back right now. I know the president is looking for replacement, and then we should all expect that we'll not just be the secretary. There'll be a whole new team that'll come aboard. We look for them to be transparent, aggressive, and accountable.
Gibson said although Congress has increased the funding for the VA over the past few years, it's a systemic change in policy that's mostly needed.
And then beyond that, we need benchmarks and milestones so that, you know, within 6 months, the American people can get an update on how all of this is progressing and that the people's representatives in the Congress can come out and report to folks on how we are moving it back in the right direction.
Gibson mentioned the recently passed VA Accountability Act that provides more discretion for hiring and firing in the administration, and with that, he foresees more changes in top-level leadership. The congressman also mentioned the importance of including more funding toward a VA program where veterans are referred to local doctors.
I believe that if we expand that program, we will reduce the backlog, we'll have more expeditious treatment, more timely treatment for our veterans. And ultimately, I think it's going to relieve some of the stress on the entire piece here.
Capital Region Democrat Paul Tonko said any changes going forward should be made in a nonpartisan manner.
We cannot have partisan divides over an issue like this. These veterans have served all people of this great nation, and they deserve and require our respect.
Tonko said the work ahead will not be an overnight fix and will span administrations.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1423. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.